The coronavirus is the biggest threat this country has faced for decades.
We have asked everyone in Wales to make changes in the way we live our lives.
Stay at home during this pandemic.
Welcome to Journos in Lockdown,
a podcast created by trainee broadcast journalists who are learning to report in a global pandemic.
As we've not been able to go out and meet journalists, we've decided to bring them to you and ask them what challenges coronavirus has brought them
and what the future of journalism might look like.
Welcome to another episode of Journos in Lockdown. I'm Anthony Coote, a trainee broadcast journalist at Cardiff University. And last week, I was lucky enough to talk on Zoom to producer-presenter for ITV's The Rundown, Amani Ibrahimi. Amani gave great advice for up-and-coming journalists and insight into how her job has changed in the current crisis. Here is the full episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, we are chatting today in Journos in Lockdown with Amani Ibrahimi. Hello, Amani, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. So I think we'll go straight ahead with the questions. So the sort of the question when you interview anyone is, how did you get into journalism?
So I've had, honestly, it feels like it was forever ago, but it actually hasn't really been that long. So I've been in the industry for 3 years. And then after I finished university, I just did a lot of work experience. So I was trying to get into TV, so I did a lot of work experience within radio just to build my portfolio. And then from there, I did an internship in TV for a month, I think, or 3 months. And then I got my first job as a reporter where I worked locally in Teesside. And then I did that for about, I think, about 11 months before I joined ITV. And I started ITV as a trainee, and then it just went on from there, really.
Looking into sort of your history on regional TV and now more nationally, how does regional TV differ from national in your experience?
Well, of course, the stories that you cover are so different. The stories that are regional are always, I guess, like community-based. And, you know, when I first started in regional news, I was in my hometown. So it kind of like mattered to me differently, if that makes sense, because it was more relevant to me. So I had a lot of interest in regional stories because, of course, it was like affecting people like me and my area and things like that. But besides that, I've always had interest in national and international stories. And the amazing thing is, working at national, I also get to cover international stories. And I just find them really exciting, really interesting. So I know that, you know, from doing both, I just like national and international stories. I just find them more interesting.
So on that, obviously, with stories in your own local neighbourhood, they sort of have a sort of a more personal element to them. Do you have any tips for young journalists, especially with dealing with those sort of more emotional moments as an objective observer?
I mean, I've covered stories before where I've had to interview people with like really sad stories, and of course it affects you emotionally as well. Even, I guess, if you relate it to the situation we're in with coronavirus, it's affecting all of us. So of course, you know, you're a journalist, but you're also human, so you're going to feel some type of like way about it. Of course, it's going to make you feel emotional, but I think as a journalist, you will always remember to stay professional. So even if something does affect you, you have to remember the bigger purpose, which is obviously to inform people and to give people a voice. So if you put that above yourself, really, I think that's what helps to like get the job done.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So sort of talking about lockdown and reporting, how has your job changed since lockdown, the mechanics of it?
So much. I mean, it just, it's everything really. I mean, of course, all I do is report on coronavirus. Literally every single story is related to that. So, and I've been speaking about coronavirus for the past, I don't know, like 3 months or maybe even longer than that when it first started in China. So it's, you know, in terms of stories that we pick, it's changed. We always get excited when it's not a coronavirus related story, actually, because it's so rare now and it feels odd, but you know, that's become the new normal. But in terms of, you know, how I'm working, everything that I need, I've got. So some parts of the show are pre-recorded, and then everything else is a voiceover. So I've got a microphone here, I've got my laptop, which has all of my softwares on it, and we stay in touch, like we do our meetings obviously online. So it's changed.
No, that's fantastic. Talking about that sort of adaption phase, do you think it's been easier, since obviously you're a digital reporter, that it's been easier for you to adapt to these new settings?
Yes. So in comparison to obviously journalists that don't work on digital platform, I can't imagine how difficult it must be for them, because I guess in a way, of course some things would have changed, but they'll still have to really go into the office or they're still out and about reporting. So I guess for me, you know, working on a show that's on a digital platform, we've got a bit of an advantage because we are able to produce it from anywhere. I'm obviously in the Northeast. Usually my base is in London, so I'm like miles away and I'm still able to continue doing the work that I'm doing.
Now that's fantastic. So we've mentioned to our viewers here, Amani is a fantastic reporter, producer on ITV's The Rundown, which is a digital-based show for young people. And on that, I think that it's good to talk about how it uses the vertical format, which is obviously quite new to us. Was it hard to adapt sort of reporting and shooting to this format?
So in terms of shooting in the studio, that's shot just as a 16:9. So, you know, you don't really feel it when you're in the studio because it's just that. So it really just comes together when you're editing. And I guess we've adapted to it quickly. But there are times, obviously, when you take things that have been filmed for TV, which you have to try and fit into this format. And that can be really challenging sometimes, especially with things that are like, you know, CCTV footage where you can't show the full thing because obviously you've got a vertical format to work with. But, you know, to deal with that problem, we've got templates. So we have horizontal templates or any different type of template where it allows you to kind of squeeze those videos in and show a bit more. So there are techniques that you can do when you're editing, but I think probably in terms of pictures, vertical is quite challenging sometimes.
Absolutely. And so we talk about sort of a lot of user generated content. How has that been during lockdown? Because obviously it's a little bit easier to get those pictures, but at the same time, people might not be as willing to send stuff across.
So usually if we have user-generated content, our digital team will also be able to get access to them. So obviously we're always in touch with the people that, you know, will write the articles or that post videos on YouTube or on our social media platforms. So obviously we're liaising with them. So if they've got access to certain footage, we're able to take that. But we always encourage user-generated stuff because obviously our platform is, you know, it fits in the vertical format, so they always look good. And it's always nice to have things from other people, I think, just to kind of, because, you know, if you think about social media as a platform, everything that people look at from Instagram to Twitter, it's people are filming it. It's not really, you know, no one's got like, I don't know, like a proper camera or whatever. Like, it's just off your phone. And that is, even for journalists, people starting to do that. So I think, yeah, they're really important. And we get a lot of good footage as well from people's phones.
That's really interesting. So for social media, obviously audience interaction is a big thing. So what's sort of your experience being with sort of audience interaction on social media?
Do you mean personally or?
Reactions to your show, I suppose.
We've had really positive reaction. Even during the pilot phase, we obviously had people that would watch it when we were testing it. And things were always positive. It always felt like there was something that was missing for a younger audience. And it was just quick news with good picture and quick graphics. So honestly, I think it's been received really well. And we've had such a huge following on these platforms. On Snapchat, we've had millions of people watching. YouTube does really well as well. And I mean, even for me, I haven't really seen anything out there that's similar to what we do in the UK. So I think it's really nice to be sort of ahead of the game in a way.
Yeah, that's really encouraging that you haven't had any negative, because I know that obviously with a lot of social media interaction, it can quickly turn negative. And sort of, I suppose, let's bring this a little bit wider with your sort of personal experience. How sort of, have you got any tips for young journalists about dealing with negative comments?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the best thing to do is ignore it. And I always get told that as well, because even in the beginning for me, I've never been in a job like this where it's so public, if that makes sense. Like, obviously, you know, working in the media industry, of course you're in the public, but I've never had a job where I've, you know, worked as a presenter where I've been sort of, you know, I have to put myself out there, obviously, because I'm telling people stories. So I think the best way is basically just to ignore it and not to take it in, because you'll have one negative comment, but there will be loads of other positive ones. And I think it's just important to focus on those rather than the negative ones.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that's very good advice. So have you had any sort of technical issues or sort of fun stories about issues that have occurred during lockdown because of, you know, Zoom calls or whatever?
So we've got, to be honest, like, we haven't had any problems with meetings or anything, because our chats are usually like really quick. And also we have got like group chats, so where we're constantly talking. So we're not really using like video chats a lot. So that's okay. But there are times when my Wi-Fi is so slow. and like it takes forever just to download videos or to send files to be checked. So I think not having like really good internet, I must be very impatient, because it doesn't even take that long, but having not being able to use the Wi-Fi at work is actually really annoying. Like, I miss the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no, that's often the case. It's quite funny actually coming home to a home Wi-Fi and having, you know, not having that super, super fast stuff that an industry infrastructure can sort of provide, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, there's little things that I miss from work, and internet's probably the biggest one, because my internet is just not good. And also I'm not by myself, like I'm staying with my family, so they're all using the internet and I can't, like, I have to make them adapt to when I'm like working, but it's just such a strange environment that they're like struggling to accommodate with everything.
Exactly. And that's sort of the thing. So, you know, people sort of dealing with lockdown and reporting and, yeah, sort of getting far closer to family. But it's quite an interesting change, especially working environment.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So sort of in line of sort of adaptions that we've had to bring, of course, due to lockdown, do you think there's any changes professionally? Do you think that will be kept after lockdown?
I think what lockdown has taught us, like I can only speak for obviously myself. I guess when you work for a digital platform, like I said, we know that we can do it from home, and that it's possible to still put something out there, even if you have no access to the studio or the newsroom. But I don't know. I don't know whether I think some things will stay. I guess, like, you know, for people that have had to work from home, like me, it's so important to be around your colleagues and to constantly be around that environment, because, you know, I'm in journalism because of how exciting the industry is and how exciting it is to be in the newsroom. So I don't think I would want to sort of like stay like this forever after lockdown. I hope not anyway.
Yeah. So is the sort of sense of people don't quite sort of realize the sense of isolation. And obviously a lot of people do get into journalism because they like talking to people, you know, they're the people persons. That's a generic phrase, but yeah.
Definitely. That's such a good way to put it. It's true.
So talking about sort of like colleagues and how, you know, everyone's been adapting, what's the best bit of corona journalism, obviously excluding your own, that you've seen during the crisis?
So something that stands out to me, and, you know, there's so many stories, like I said, like literally every single day we're covering things with coronavirus. So I think a story that from the top of my head that stood out to me was probably the story about the little girl who has cancer, who's reunited with her dad after basically they were like separated for ages because he had to work. I just thought that story was beautiful because we were able to like speak to them before the dad was allowed to go back home, and then after. It was just such a nice video to watch as well.
Where can people sort of find that? That sounds really touching.
Yeah, so it should be on our website. If people wanted to watch it, we did a follow-up with them. So it's just such a nice story. It's really, and I think it's important to have stories like that during a time like this when everything can seem a bit negative.
Absolutely, I think that is very important to have sort of the positive side of things as well. So I should have mentioned this before, but obviously your show is aimed at young people. Has that changed the way you've gathered news as a journalist?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, things that would make a top story in the programme would not necessarily be a top story for us. And even if you as a journalist think, oh, do you know what, I think this is like the lead, you have to remember that this is the age group that you're working for. This is the type of content that they want to see. And you have to adapt to that. And of course, there's a lot of things that we go by, like, for example, trends. I'm constantly keeping my eye open on Instagram and Twitter. And, you know, I guess Twitter does come in, even for TV, you would try and find stories on Twitter. But things that are trending are usually things that we look for. And even the way that you tell the story. So in terms of scripting, the way that I try to explain things, especially if it's political or something that can be, you know, a little bit more complicated, I've definitely had to change that for this show.
Well, that's a fantastic skill in itself, being able to sort of explain it in more accessible terms. Do you think there is a way, almost in the inverse, that older people, you know, especially of the sort of grandparents generation, shall we say, can be sort of more attracted to social media? Do you think there's anything that companies, especially media companies, can do in that sense?
Yes. So, I mean, to be honest, like, even though the age that we aim this for, people that are 14 to 17, but having said that, we do have people that are older that watch it, people in their 20s, people in their 30s, even 40s. And of course, we do post it on Facebook where there's an older audience. So each platform actually, you know, you'll see a different pattern in terms of who's watching. But I think what people look for and how you attract people these days, I think, is basically people have a shorter attention span. People want quick news. They sometimes don't want certain information that they don't think is relevant. So just telling them, you know, summing up the story and giving them updates of the top stories of the day, I think most people want that, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I definitely had another question somewhere around here.
That's all right, don't worry. It feels weird to be on the other side. Like, I don't think I've, like, done many interviews.
Well, yeah, no, that's the interesting thing. Actually, that's a good question in itself. Sort of how does it feel to sort of be on the interview side of an interview, of your interviewee?
Yeah, strange. Like, I can understand sometimes when I've interviewed people and I'm, you know, trying to, like, reassure them, like, it's okay. Like, I know there's a camera in front of your face, but it's fine. Like, you can start again. It's not live. But I can actually understand why, like, they kind of feel a bit nervous. It is such a weird feeling, like, being asked questions. Especially when you're used to being on the other side, it's quite odd.
That's the interesting thing, is, you know, keeping people at ease. I suppose that's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Talking about sort of the media as a whole, do you think that the mainstream media has been sort of helped by the crisis, that more people have come back towards mainstream media?
I think that the mainstream media has played such a big role, obviously, during this whole pandemic. But, you know, people are tuning into the news now more than they were before because, you know, they're just trying to get a bit of hope, I guess.
Mm. No, absolutely. This is the thing. I mean, I suppose there's a comfort in knowing that it's a trusted and vetted source, I suppose, you know, rather than scrolling through a feed, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
So as a person who works using social media, do you have any particular social media pet peeves?
You know what? I just think sometimes social media sometimes can be a negative place. And, you know, it goes without saying, really, but I guess it comes with it. So there are, like, pros and cons to social media. Of course, it allows us to connect with so many people and to obviously find content and generate content. But sometimes social media can be negative. And I think, you know, I guess, like, it lets it down in a way. But that's probably negative comments. It's just not, like, I just wish they didn't exist on there.
Yeah, so the overwhelming sort of negativity that some people bring to social media, you'd sort of hope that people be a touch more positive.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. So sort of on a sort of last note, do you have any additional advice for young journalists trying to get their first job in the industry, especially during this very strange time we find ourselves in?
Yeah, so I think what is really important, and I kind of wish that people said this to me when I was younger, because I put so much pressure on myself. I think it's just important to, like, remember that you can do things at your own pace because you're on your own journey, and you don't have to, like, I guess, like, try and do exactly what other journalists are doing, because you can be yourself in this industry. Like, you don't have to, you know, you can obviously be inspired by other people, but you don't have to be like other people. And I just feel like when I was a student, I kind of felt like this pressure, like, if this journalist did it like this, then I have to do it like this. And it really doesn't work like that. People do different things at different stages and people get to different points, and it's fine, it's okay. But I think as long as you've got passion and you know what your goal is and you know where you want to be, then, you know, your route is going to be different, but all that matters is when you get there. But, you know, in terms of, like, getting there, work experience is so important. Just getting yourself out there, building a portfolio, and trying to sell yourself, because nobody else is going to do that for you.
Actually, I mean, on that point, and sort of a little addition, what sort of advice would you give? Obviously, a lot of people do work experience out there, and obviously that can be a sort of a slightly slippery slope, I suppose, about sort of doing a lot of volunteer work. So sort of advice about sort of limitations on that, and sort of where would you stop the buck, so to speak, with that sort of work?
Yeah. So, you know, when I left university, I did a lot of volunteering. And for me, that was the only way that I was going to build a portfolio. But I think you just have to accept that, you know, there's going to be a time where you do have to volunteer. If, you know, if there's a goal that you want to reach, then you have to build a portfolio. You have to have something to show people. So I think, you know, I think people should have, like, an open mind to doing things like that, because they might enjoy it. And honestly, there might be things that you'll do that you might think, oh, actually, you know what? I don't think this is the route I want to go to. But you will never know unless you try it.
exactly. Try and find what you like, and you know, that success will come.
yeah, for sure.
Well, on that lovely positive note, we'll formally end the podcast there. I just wanted to thank you very much for coming on. It's been very insightful, and
thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you on.
Thanks again to Amani for taking the time to talk to us, and thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Lockdown Journos. And we hope you will join us for the next episode, where Evan Hall will be in conversation with BBC Newsbeat's Stefan Powell. But until then, stay safe.